10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
How has social media changed human trafficking?
Social media is the main way that people recruit, especially on Meta. Meta's products are just total garbage. Facebook and Instagram, I gotta have those products, don't get me wrong, but the protection of kids is not their concern. One of my favorite things is when Mark Zuckerberg, one of my favorite and also one of my most frustrating is when Mark Zuckerberg is kind of pulled in front of Congress for a congressional hearing. They grill him on why he's not protecting kids. And they make him feel bad. They get their clips and make him look like an idiot. But then he goes back to California and nothing ever happens. So it's nice, but it's also really frustrating because Meta is the main way that people recruit. And it's all based on their algorithm, honestly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to part two of this week's episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Our guest this week is Tyler Schwab. Yep, you've heard his name before. This is his fifth appearance on the show. And we're only doing audio this week, and I'm looking at the camera like I'm talking to you. So that's kind of strange, too, for me. But the reason being that our guest this week, if you listened to yesterday's episode, you know he's under death threats. So we do not post on YouTube video or audio. So if you're a YouTube listener or viewer and you think Murph screwed up, I'll screw up somewhere else, but I didn't screw that up. That's why you're over here on whatever your favorite audio podcast channel is listening to it now. We'll be back on YouTube next week, so bear with us. I will not do anything to jeopardize this man's life. He is under repetitive death threats to the point that he can't even go back to South America. And we're talking about human trafficking and child exploitation. It sounds odd to say my favorite topic, Tyler, but, and by the way, welcome back to part two this week.
Thanks for having me, my man.
It's an honor, truly an honor. This is the guy that gives me a lot of credit for things that I didn't do. This is a young man who, from the very first time I talked to him, it was an immediate yes. Let's be friends. Let's do what we can to help each other. He keeps me motivated. I think the only reason he comes on the show is to make me cry, and it works. And you know what? I hope it's making some of you listeners cry too, because what's going on to some of these children, as well as adults, but children, I mean, it's just so heartbreaking. That one story you told us several episodes ago, I can't even repeat that anymore because it still breaks my heart just to think about what that poor baby was going through. And we're talking about a baby. Yeah. So we ended yesterday. We had talked about some success stories that they'd enjoyed and some of the rescues. But just want to talk a little bit, Tyler, about the rescue itself, because I'm guessing most people really don't know what a rescue looks like when it comes to child exploitation and human trafficking. So, I mean, how do you find out about them, and then who investigates them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So how we find out is usually through the reports of other victims. Victims will disclose like what's happening or who the bad guys are, something that's happening to their friends, or something happening to them.
Yeah.
And we always report that to law enforcement. We can help in certain aspects, amplify their ability to investigate, but who has the legal mandate to investigate is law enforcement. And as much as I watch shows like Batman and Daredevil, and I'm like, man, vigilante justice is just, sometimes you wish you were vigilante, but we're not. We're not vigilantes. We always seek to do things the right way, because if you do things the right way, it will lead to just a better outcome for all involved, better outcome for the survivors. Better outcome for us, better outcome for the victims. And so that's what we do is we help amplify those efforts and really focus on the part that law enforcement can't control and doesn't have funding to control, which is the survivor care, which we always think if without them, there's no case. And a lot of the girls, when we first started doing this, felt used by the legal system where they offered up their most vulnerable moments and in return, they didn't get a response or the case took a long time or whatever. Mm. And with us, like we can have that communication be pretty constant. and keep them informed on things, keep them aware of things, and then just make sure that they are, when the time comes where they are engaged by law enforcement again, that they're in a better place than they were when law enforcement first found them. Right. But rescues can happen. It can happen in a lot of different ways. The rescue that we had, where it's literally like a break down the door and go in with law enforcement and remove a victim from the perpetrator. Like the story I told you yesterday with the two little girls, the one that wants to come study out west.
All right.
That was just that. They freaking brought the battering ram in. They freaking broke down that door. We go in, put the mom in handcuffs, remove those three kids from the situation. And in that situation, that was very, I think probably what most people would imagine it would look like, probably the closest thing to Taken that someone would see. Law enforcement go in, arrest, removal of the victims, and we all go on our merry way. There's some that happened that are a little less conventional. There's one that happened actually on the 4th of July. In the early, early morning of 4th of July, we had this thing happen, which is fitting, you know, the day that we celebrate 250 years of independence and freedom and all the rights that we have. There's a case that we had, this was like 2 days ago, mm-hmm. of a 17-year-old girl who was contracted to come work in a bar in Mexico for the World Cup. They go down there, and a lot of people are actually going to the World Cup to watch the World Cup. A lot of people from Colombia are going down to watch the World Cup because I believe Colombia is playing in Mexico, if I'm not mistaken. And so this girl just kind of disappeared in the masses. She was, I'm just going down to work the World Cup and to make some money and bring it home. Wasn't the case. What she was done is she was forced into sexual exploitation during the World Cup. So people that would watch the World Cup would then go and purchase her for sex, a 17-year-old kid in Mexico. So in the middle of all this chaos, there's this one little girl that's just suffering, and she's just one of many, I'm sure. And so she escaped. She escaped in the late evening from this brothel and was trying to find her way. But in Mexico City, it's tough to find your way and to get to the airport and all these different things. So she reached out for help, and we're really lucky at Libertas International to work with a really good agency that I think you know really well, Deheen.
Oh, yeah.
Maverin is really good friends with a bunch of Deheen agents, and somehow her information got to Deheen. But Deheen, like, what are they going to do in this situation in Mexico? Like, they can't do anything.
Deheen's in Colombia.
Yeah, Deheen's in Colombia. There's a funding aspect of it where, like, how are we going to get this kid home? And what are we going to do against these Mexican traffickers? There's a lot they can do against the Colombian traffickers that recruited her to go to Mexico. Right. But as far as their case in Mexico, there's nothing they can do. And so they reached out to us. What can we do? What can I do from the comfort of my bed at 6 a.m. in the morning while my nephew is running back and forth watching Miss Rachel? I can actually do a lot. And so what I did is Maverin, who was the point of contact for this case, was working with Deheen. And like, how do we get this girl home? You can get her home with a flight. Who can buy the flight? The nonprofit can, because we're not government. We don't have to ask permission to use these funds. We use the funds to help the victims. So we offer that up. Look, if she can get to the airport, if she can run to the airport, get a free ride, something, we can get her home. And so that's what we did. She found a way to get to the airport. While she was getting to the airport, they sent us her passport info. And on my ass, watching my nephew watch Miss Rachel, mm-hmm. I booked her a flight from Mexico City to Bogota, Bogota to Medellin. By noon, she was home with her family.
Wow.
And that's what it looks like sometimes to do a rescue is you use Expedia, you work with law enforcement, you help fill some of those gaps that they might have. If it wasn't for Libertas in this case, she probably could have gone to the Colombian consul. But during the World Cup, during the chaos that is Mexico, it's probably a long time before she actually would have gotten home. But because Deheen was friends with Maverin, and we had some extra funding to play with. Literally, we rescued this girl with a total cost of maybe $420, and it led to her freedom on Independence Day.
Wow.
And so, like, each situation kind of varies. It can be the hard rescue I talked about with those little girls, or it can be a rescue where it's almost virtual, where you're just working with different parties to make sure that this girl has the resources, and these kids have the resources, and the law enforcement has the resources to remove a victim from her trafficker.
Will Colombian authorities follow up and go after the folks that put her in that position to start with?
Yeah. Yeah. Deheen's great. Deheen's great in that way. They're the Colombian system is slow, but this office that we've worked with Deheen, they've done some really cool cases. There's a case of a restaurant in Medellin that was trafficking women to Greece. One that was trafficking girls to Thailand. Because a lot of these girls come to these places and they're awful, awful places, but they want to make more money. So they reach out to the boss for more money. And when they reach out to the boss for more money, it signals to the boss that they're desperate. And so they work with foreign traffickers to send these girls willingly to a place like Thailand where they are exploited. And in this case, the girl, she's very brave. She went through a lot in Mexico, obviously, during the World Cup and what happened there. But she's given names. We have the name of the place that she was recruited from, the number she was recruited from, the brothel that or the nightclub that she first went to go ask for work at. Dina has all that, and we stand at the ready to assist in whatever may come in this investigation. The next step in this investigation, I'm going to assume, just based on past experience, is probably more victim identification. Once you have a number and a place that this has happened before and a live victim, usually what happens after that is more survivors come forward and more survivors are identified.
Yeah. Do you know in Mexico, do you know if it was related to any of the cartels?
I'm gonna assume yeah, because they kind of have their hands in everything in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm not super confident in Mexico's ability to do anything with this, just because it's so tied in. And every experience I've ever had in Mexico, when it comes to like human trafficking and refugees and Colombians or whatever, is always ended really poorly. So I'm not confident we'll get the Mexican ones on this end. Especially with like the new president coming in Colombia, he's not super good friends with Miss Sheinbaum. So I don't have, but I would assume it's cartel related because they kind of control everything down there.
Gotcha.
Or at least take their cut.
So that's a perfect segue into, I mentioned yesterday that we're going to get into what parents need to hear. And the first question I have listed under this is how are kids being recruited today? We just heard a perfect example right there. And to me, and of course, people in Colombia didn't grow up like people in the United States. They have different morals and values and things that they worry about. But it seems to me like the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is just the most common sense thing you could look at from an approach like that if an opportunity like that comes up. But so in your opinion, how has social media changed human trafficking? We talked yesterday about Telegram, but I mean, you got AI out there now, Snapchat, the gaming that goes on, dating apps, fake job offers, college recruiting, modeling scams.
Yep. A lot of those.
Wow.
Yeah. It's all social media now. The days of the taken scenario where someone is kidnapped is not likely at all. Because it just kicks up so much dust. And traffickers like to maintain that low profile. You have to maintain some kind of connection with the public because that's who purchases your product. So if they cannot kick up dust, then they won't. Like in Salt Lake City, for example, like closest metropolitan to where I live, a lot of the traffickers will recruit just homeless youth. The youth that run away from home, they're living kind of on the streets because no one's looking for them. No one cares if they're gone or not. And that's kind of what traffickers want. They want the child that no one's looking for. So they recruit that way. But social media, like in outside of that context, social media is the main way that people recruit, especially on Meta. Like Meta's products are just total garbage. Facebook and Instagram, like I have those products. Like, don't get me wrong, but the protection of kids is not their concern. One of my favorite and also one of my most frustrating is when Mark Zuckerberg is kind of pulled in front of Congress for a congressional hearing. They grill him on why he's not protecting kids. And they make him feel bad. They get their clips and make him look like an idiot. But then he goes back to California and nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
So it's nice, but it's also really frustrating because Meta is the main way that people recruit. And it's all based on their algorithm, honestly. One of the guys, he's probably listening to this from prison because he's obsessed with me. And he's one of the reasons that we don't do YouTube is because he found Steve on YouTube. But he's in a Colombian jail and he listens to the podcast, I assume all podcasts that I'm on from prison. And him, when he was arrested, we also questioned one of his friends because his social media had a lot of young girls on it. And we were like, what? Like, do you know this guy? Do you know this thing? And this guy, he was just, look, like when I'm a friend with one, the algorithm feeds me seven more. They are in the similar situation, vulnerable, young, pretty, poor, and the algorithm just keeps feeding me. How am I supposed to know? He'll make a ton of excuses. How am I supposed to know? I'm not defending him in any way, but he does have a point where the algorithm does, it feeds you that. Like it knows what you like. It knows what you're commenting on. It knows what you're looking at. And it'll feed you more and more and more and more vulnerable kids. and Meta just refuses to do nothing about it. Like TikTok, it happens everywhere. Kick is really bad. Video games are bad. I had a case here in Salt Lake City of a girl there was an attempted abduction via Free Fire, one of those apps, those online apps that the kids play.
Right.
So they'll use it all. Technology can be such a nice asset for parents and for the world as a whole, but predators, they're really good at taking what's good and finding ways to exploit it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to give an advice to anybody is be very careful with Meta product, because TikTok at least makes an effort to try to fix what their bugs are. Facebook, they make no effort. They're just, we're huge. We can do whatever we want. Yeah, you can embarrass us every 6 months, but we'll keep doing the same things. It brings us in money. But you give a child a cell phone that has unfettered access to everything with no parental control, you might as well just start introducing them to predators. Because these predators, they're everywhere and they are patient. Like they will wait months and months and months and months, and they'll send DM after DM, DM after DM. And then just one bad day and they get them hooked. And next thing you know, your kid is, you're being groomed, being exploited, being whatever. And it all happens mainly through social media and mainly through Meta and their products.
And you and I have a common friend in Chad Melly who fights human trafficking from Kuala Lumpur. And he said the exact same thing. So here's the lesson to the parents is the reason I'm hesitating, I hesitate to tell anybody else how to raise their child, but if the way that we're doing things is not working, the definition of lunacy is to continue to do the same things and expect a different outcome. Yep. So you've got to take an active role in your children's social media presence, their telephone activities, their online gaming. Because I watch my son-in-law, he's got a 9-year-old daughter, and he enjoys playing online gaming on Call of Duty. And she loves her daddy. She likes hanging out with her daddy, but she's learning how to do that. So you just have to take an active role in everything that they do. Are you invading their privacy? You're their parent. You're supposed to do that. They learn from you. They learn by example. If they see you guys spending all the time on your phone, which all of us do, I'm guilty of it too. What do you think they've learned from that? Oh, I got to get one of those. It's exactly what they learn. And hats off to our daughter and her husband that they control the iPad time. They pay attention to what they're looking at. They don't give her a phone. It's a big deal. They gave her one of those little watches, but they control who she can talk to. But again, kids are smart. They're a whole lot smarter than their parents, and they're really smart when it comes to defeating the parents when they give them a rule. So you got to stay on top of it. I'm beating a dead horse here, but it's worth listening to. Not what I'm saying, but what Tyler here just told you about. You got to be involved.
And it can happen to anyone. Like this, the thing is, there's this guy in South Dakota, and this guy, Steve, excuse my language, but he is effed. He picked with the wrong kid. This kid, the girl that he exploited is in our foundation. Her mother is the girl that you met in San Diego. She's very protected. She's very well connected with different law enforcement agencies. Her mom's a survivor. Her mom teaches her how to do things. She's got me as a godfather with all of our connections. And a predator still got in. Still. Jeez. He got in through TikTok. Like now he's totally toast. Like he's done. Like he messed with the wrong kid, but he got to her. He got to the most, maybe the most protected child when it comes to like people around her that have lived experience, people that have connections, like yada, yada, yada. And he still got in. They can get in no matter how hard you protect them, no matter how hard that you build that cocoon around them, they can still get in. And so knowing kind of the signs, knowing what apps they use and being aware of like privacy be damned at this point, the way the world is, like, unfortunately kids, because they're kids, they don't have the right to privacy, and you're doing it to protect them because this, like even this kid, the kid, right, I always bring up in these cases, it was via TikTok, and she is the most protected and educated kid as far as human trafficking on the planet, and someone still got in, and someone was still able to potentially sexually exploit her.
Mm. So for my kids, you know you're going to be hearing from me shortly.
Hell yeah, Steve.
These are worth it. Seriously. So seriously, parents, just please be involved. Tyler, what? I think I know what scares you the most now after talking about that. Is that what scares you the most is social media?
Yeah, I think the thing that scares me the most is social media as far as kids in my circle. I hate snakes. Snakes scare me too.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't like snakes at all. I'm scared that when I die, that no one comes to my funeral. That also scares me.
I'll be there.
Okay, good, good. That makes you glad, Steve. I want to die before you, though, because I won't be able to handle your funeral, man. I'd be too sad.
Nah.
So I hope I go first. But yeah,
I know where I'm going, so I don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's true. You have a first class ticket. But yeah, the social media, like it's just so powerful, but it's also just so scary because, I mean, just anything can happen, especially now with AI. Like you post a picture, someone could be turning that into just something that could ruin your life, and that's really scary.
It really is. What's, in your opinion, what's the biggest misconception that American tourists have when they travel overseas, especially if they're taking their kids with them?
That's a good question. The biggest misconception for bad guys that go overseas is that they sometimes think that American laws don't apply to them once they cross the border. That's 100% not true. Like a lot of the guys that we've encountered in Colombia have used the excuse, well, the age of consent here is 14, according to what I found on Google. Not knowing that, yeah, that may be true, but that's concerning a Colombian girl and a Colombian man. When it's an American tourist, you're still under U.S. law, and that's still very much pedophilia, and you can get arrested. So knowing you are under American laws when you travel, you might as well just assume that everywhere is applicable to those laws, because what you commit, if you commit a crime overseas, it's a crime in the United States, you can still be prosecuted for it. When it comes to the American tourists that travel with their kids, I think the advice that I would give is maybe don't worry too much about your kids being kidnapped in a foreign country. That's so unlikely that I wouldn't want that to like ruin the experience of tourism. Now, certain countries, I would definitely like take precautions. Like Mexico, yeah, take precautions in certain parts of the country and be aware of your kids' safety. But when it comes to like taking their kids, like more likely than not, your kids aren't going to get kidnapped. Nobody wants that type of attention on them. When it comes to kidnapping or trafficking, it's you can find a lot of easier victims that people wouldn't come looking for you. And there's just so much culture there that don't overprotect them. Right, to experience the culture. That being said, you know, do have care in some places where you take your kids, but for the most part, you're going to be safe.
I can't remember what you call them now. The little tracking devices that you could put in your luggage or you could put in your pocket. Yeah. It just seems like the right thing to do if you're traveling with your children.
Yeah.
So I want to get into some myths that I found, and I figure you're the good myth buster here because you've got the experience in this realm. And there's six different myths here. So I'm going to tell you the myth, and then you tell me what the reality is. So number one is trafficking always involves kidnapping. Is that true?
No. No, some of the worst cases that I've had in my career is parents trafficking their kids, and they traffic them in broad daylight. They live in a normal suburban life, and from 5 till 9, those kids are trafficked. They go to bed, wake up the next day, go to school, repeat that process for a decade. No kidnapping, but there's always an exchange of goods. That's where the trafficking comes in. Is if you're a minor under the age of 18, it's always trafficking. If you're an adult and someone is exchanging money to exploit you, that's also trafficking, and that can happen without being kidnapped.
Well, and it just blows my mind that parents would traffic their children. I just have a real hard time with that. Anyway, number two, only poor children become victims. True?
False, but with a caveat.
Okay.
Poverty is a huge factor in trafficking victims. Most of them come from really desperate circumstances, really hard economic circumstances. But I've had cases of kids that were trafficked as well from ritzy neighborhoods in Park City, Utah, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, Seattle, Washington. Just people are monsters. Doesn't matter how much money is in their bank account. Like sometimes monsters are just monsters. However, poverty is, I would say, probably the highest, how do you even word this?
Motivator.
Yeah. And of all the victims that I've worked with, and I've worked with, I can't tell you how many victims over the last 13 years, Steve, 98% of them have been in desperate poverty. And that's how they end up in exploitation, or that's how they were taken advantage of, or that's why the family turned to exploitation. So it's, it's not true, but it's also a little bit of a caveat there.
A contributing factor.
Yeah.
When you and I were in San Diego last year, you met one of the speakers there, Natasha Herzig, who was kidnapped when she was, I think, 17 years old in San Jose, California, from a affluent family, forced into sex trafficking for some time until she was able to escape her circumstances. So, and the reason I'm bringing Natasha up is, one, I don't have heroes, but I have people that I really look up to, like you and her, because when people don't let their horrible past dictate what they're going to do in the future, I just have a lot of admiration for people like that. Natasha is extremely independent now. She's well-spoken. She's outspoken. And she has a position in which she's helping victims of human trafficking and child exploitation now. So, Natasha, good job. Next myth. Only girls are victims. True or false?
Big false.
Yeah.
I would say that, yeah, it's just 100% false. That being said, like, the majority of the cases that I've worked are females, but there's a lot of boys that are trafficked. One of the hardest cases that I had was of a little boy who was trafficked in Bogota, Colombia, just on the streets. This kid, just a great kid. His name was Brian, and he was referred to me by a Homeland agent, and he was perpetually trafficked on the street from the time that he was 12 to he was 17. We rescued a group of boys who were trafficked. It's really sad. Kind of a fake job offer. They were in Colombia. They took a fake job offer to go to Turkey, where gay nightclubs is like, it's there, but homosexuality is technically sin. Mm-hmm. You can't do it, but there's these nightclubs that dedicate to people like that. And they were trafficked inside this nightclub and they were just forced to dance. They were forced to strip, and they were young boys. And we had to help get them out and get them back to Colombia. The majority of cases are girls, but there's so many boys that are sex trafficked, and even more so when it comes to labor trafficking. So many men and boys are victims of labor trafficking.
Jeez. And that's a whole another realm. Yeah. And folks, you can learn a lot more about this if you just Google human trafficking and look at some of the things that are on there. I think I saw the report from 2024 from the United Nations over in Vienna. And here we are in 2026.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay. Next up, human trafficking happens only overseas.
False. Happens all over. Happens every country in the world, every state in the States. And it can happen in the hardest neighborhood in Chicago or the most affluent neighborhood in California. It really has, it has no borders, unfortunately. It happens to everybody. It happens to everybody. It can happen anywhere.
Yep. This was kind of strange. Parents always know. That's the myth that's out there. I don't think they do. I think we just talked about that. What's going on your phones? What's going on social media? What's going on with your friends?
Yeah.
So I don't think that's right, right?
No, parents don't always know. No. I mean, if parents are the perpetrator, I mean, kids could be totally fine. I've even had cases, Steve, they've been trafficked by their best friends. Where just Jeez. During school, they go to the bathroom during recess or breaks, whenever, and they'll be exploited in a bathroom or off campus at a university or whatever. And it's a best friend that's kind of the main trafficker. I had a case like this in Guatemala where the trafficker was actually a minor herself and trafficking her best friends to just people in the community. And the parents, and those rescues too, when it's time to call the parents and the parents have to come pick their kids up from the police station and learn what's actually been going on. I've seen lives just come crumbling down when people find out what was happening just underneath the surface of their perfect family life. So yeah, parents don't always know. I wish there was a case, but they don't.
Holy cow. Okay. And number six, traffickers are monsters that all of us, we just recognize them when we walk down the street.
No, God, I wish. I wish. Now I will say I'm a big believer in trusting your gut. And if someone gives you a feeling of, I would always trust that. Maybe judging or whatever, but I always trust my gut in almost every situation. But they don't. They don't have a look about them. There was one guy. I passed this on to my friends at Customs and Border Protection. He was harassing Libertas on Instagram, just kind of bragging about being a sex tourist. And I usually don't clap back at these people, but I clap back at this guy. I called him a loser and all these different things. And he ended up blocking me, but I got his picture because he's confessing the crimes on the Libertas Instagram page. Sent to my friends at Customs and Border. And the guy was like, yeah, he looks like he's one of ours. He looks like he would be this type of guy. So some of them do have a look, but I mean, we talk about influencers, pharmacists. Mm-hmm. We've had taxi drivers, MMA fighters, school teachers. I mean, once you know who they are, they look like monsters. But before that, they just look like the gray man, someone that you would pass by in the street and not even give a second thought to.
Yeah. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the myths that are out there, and now you know the truth. So I want to switch over now and lighten up just a little bit. It's still some serious things we're going to do here on a rapid fire. Wow. A guy named Rick Jacobson introduced me to this, and I've started incorporating it every week, and it seems to be a lot of fun. People seem to like hearing about it. So these are one word or short answers. It's totally up to you. If it's something you want to expound on, go ahead. So first up, what's the most dangerous country in your opinion?
Haiti. Yeah, Haiti. I've been in Haiti a couple of different times on operations and stuff. If I never went back to Haiti ever again, it would be too soon.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I only went there once. I got sick and I was there for 2 weeks. I only made it to the third day and they had to medevac me out.
Yeah.
It's the nastiest country I've ever been in. But you look at what's going on down there now.
Horrific.
Okay. Most inspiring survivor.
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'm going to go with, let me look at my phone real quick. Who's inspiring the most today? God, I think the most inspiring one is probably the one that I talked about yesterday when it comes to the girl that was abused by 10 different guys and stood up in court and different things. Mm-hmm. And I mention that because this girl has every reason to not keep going, but she continues to do so. And not so she can be an activist, not so she can fight human trafficking on her own. She chooses to live and to be a normal kid because that's what she knows that she deserves. Today, she's the most inspiring to me is that girl.
Excellent. Who's the best investigator?
Steve Murphy.
I'm not sending you a check.
I would. I'd tell you the names, but I wouldn't want to mention the people's names on the podcast. I do think it's Steve Murphy. That's for one.
Thank you.
I think he's the best one. I would probably say there's an Homeland agent. I don't even mention the state, but he's out east. And he's the best one because he protects the victims at all costs. He's very thorough in what he does. And he always goes about it with a victim-centered approach. And him and then a girl from Miami. I won't mention her name either because she wouldn't like it, but there's a female investigator from Miami who for Esme specifically went to bat for her so that she could testify against Stephen Correa, which was the gate that kind of opened up everything that Esme has been able to do ever since to kind of unlock that part of her mind where it's like, I actually can dream because I'm a special kid. And not only does she do a great job investigating that case and the cases of most of the Americans that go down to Colombia to commit this crime, she also, when it was very inconvenient for her to do so, she stood up for Esme and one other girl to allow that experience for them to happen.
Excellent. Love it.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino, celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
What's the worst excuse that you ever heard from a trafficker?
God. There's one guy that he was being arrested and he yelled at the cops saying that we had no proof. We had no proof. When we busted down his door, he had a 15-year-old naked girl in his bed at 6 a.m. We had no proof. And then when he pled guilty, he's in prison in Colombia trying to get out. He has ChatGPT write a legal case for him, calling him the victim in all of this. Like, there's like 15 victims that have come forward against this guy of what he did, and he still doesn't have the humility or whatever. Like, I don't think he wants to call himself a pedophile. But that one takes a kick. We've had people, I didn't know they were a minor or she wanted it or she led me on or whatever. But that guy in his Airbnb at 6 a.m. in the morning with a naked teenager in his bed while he's being handcuffed, telling us that we had no proof, has to take the cake.
Yeah.
We're like, interesting. Okay.
The term comes to my mind, dumbass.
Yeah, he is a dumbass. Yeah. And the pool apartment, Steve, smelled like Axe body spray. If that gives you any indication, Axe body spray mixed with, it's like a guy that hasn't showered in 5 or 6 days and is too lazy to get in the shower, who tries to cover it with Axe body spray. You know the smell I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's nasty. Yeah,
that's what he smelled like, dude.
What's your favorite country?
The United States of America.
Yeehaw. There you go.
Yeah. National parks, baby.
Yeah. What's the hardest rescue you've participated in?
The hardest one that I participate in, that's a good question. There's been a couple that have been really hard emotionally. There was one girl where she was having a miscarriage during the operation. And so she gave birth and obviously I'll let people's minds go where it needs to stop. But kind of to deal with the aftermath of that during a rescue was very traumatic. Mexico's hard because every time we go to a place in Mexico, someone gets tipped off. There was one time in Mexico, Steve, where I was on Cozumel, and this was during COVID, and it got tipped off that the Americans were there to arrest the traffickers, and I had to rush back, and they had our names. I had to rush back to the airport in Cancun before 6 p.m. for the last flight left for the United States, and bro, this is when you had to get the COVID test and stuff, get into the States and all these different things. And so we left our rental car on the beach. Didn't even return it. We left on the beach, got on the boat. On the boat, they did nasal swabs to get a negative COVID test. We did that on the half-hour boat ride to Cancun from Cozumel. Arrive in Cancun, get a taxi driver. It's already 4. We're already late. We book a flight just last minute, get to the airport. There's a massive line. Everybody's leaving Cancun. We got really lucky and someone saw that we had to get on the plane in 45 minutes. So let's get the line. But we were running for our life at that point. And me sitting on that plane was the safest I've ever felt getting back to the States because that thing in Mexico went south. And the other one that was really hard is one where the trafficker came after a newly 18-year-old victim where the state wasn't going to help. The girl was at risk, helping her put us at risk physically as well. And the government couldn't help us at all. And we had to step in and really just keep this girl safe because they needed her testimony, but they couldn't help her because she wasn't a minor anymore. And we did it. And it was hard because it was very expensive financially and it was very dangerous, but we had to do what we had to do.
I'm going to guess that's outside the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. It was okay. In Colombia. Yeah.
So what's the best day you've ever had?
Oh man, the best day I ever had. Oh God, bro, the day I met Steve Murphy. That's the best day I've ever had, no doubt.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't pay him to say this, okay?
No, the day I met Steve Murphy is the best day I've ever had, and I think other than that, probably the day I met my niece and my nephew for the first time. Yeah. My niece and my nephew are about 3 weeks apart, and I met them 3 weeks apart, and meeting them was probably the best day of my life. Those 2 weeks.
Yeah. I saw some pictures of you. Very cute.
Very cute.
One movie.
Logan, no doubt. Logan's my favorite movie. I love Hugh Jackman. I love the X-Men. And if someone wants an accurate representation of what human trafficking victims and their behavior exhibit, watch Logan. Because the way that that girl portrays being a victim of human trafficking, which she is in that movie, the ferocity, the kindness, the distrust, the humility, all of those emotions packed into a half hour can exhibit themselves in a half hour is in Logan. So Logan will forever be my favorite movie.
Wow. I thought you liked that actor.
Yeah, I love Hugh Jackman. Yeah, I love him. And I love Daphne Keane too.
The other actor, the bad guy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Because he's in it. That's a good point. That's a good point. Because I saw him in that, the bad guy. Boyd was in that. And he was just an asshole of a villain. Donald Pierce was his name. And I watched it. And the algorithm, again, pushes you to stuff. And in 2017, when I watched Logan, I was like, this is my favorite movie. I got to watch this again, 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 again. the algorithm shows up. It's like, you watch Boyd Holbrook and Logan, you may also like Narcos on Netflix. And I'm like, what is this? Freaking Steve Murphy.
Good job, Boyd. All right. And by the way, everybody, Tyler here has his own podcast. It's called Locked Off Logic, where they review a lot of movies there. So that's where I kind of give him a hard time.
Boyd is listening. Please come on. I want to talk to you about Narcos, about Logan. Please come on, Boyd, if you're listening.
Let's reach out to him and see what he says.
That'd be awesome, man.
All right. I think I promised that before and didn't follow through. I apologize.
It's all good. You got a lot going on.
All right. How about one book?
Oh, man. I'm going to recommend four just because they're all on the top of my head. My favorite book of all time is The Promise of a Pencil by Adam Braun. It's very similar to my own story. It's a different and similar. A guy travels the world, finds people in need of education, finds a bunch of kids, and starts his own nonprofit in Laos, Guatemala, and Uganda. And his journey of building his nonprofit is one of the best books I've ever read. One I just recently finished reading, Leave Only Footprints. I forget the author, but it's on the New York Times bestseller list. A guy travels to every national park in a year and writes down what he learned in each national park. And love the country we live in, Steve. But that book really just solidified of what a great place we live in. All this place exists in the same place. And the story is just so inspiring. Three, Manhunters. Steve Murphy, Javier Pena. I love that book. I'm not just kissing his ass, but I'm kissing his ass a little bit. But but that book, I read that book before I met Steve. And I recommended it to a nonprofit that I worked for at the time because I think it's a great manual on how to work with foreign law enforcement, being an American citizen. The ups and the downs that someone can experience in that process, because it's not just we're American, we're here to help, and it's all good. There's a lot of different political stuff that goes into it, some personality stuff that goes into it, how to build camaraderie, which I think in the States, in my experience, we're very much focused on results first and relationships later. And in other countries, it's not that way. It's relationships first and then results later, if the results even come at all.
Yeah.
And that book I recommend, I was like, everybody needs to read this book in this company because it's a great manual on how to work with law enforcement. The chapter where you guys got your medal is one of my favorite chapters I've ever read in a book, period, because I resonated so much with it. And it was such a beautiful tribute to your foreign partners that put so much on the line to do so much good. I loved that book.
Thank you.
And then last one is one I'm currently reading, Excommunicated Warrior by Nick Koumoulatos. For anyone looking to just make a transition in their life and needing a way to do it to maintain your identity or to find a new identity, it's a great book. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yep. Nick's a former guest here on the show as well. Nick Koumoulatos. One charity besides Libertas.
I'm going to mention the International Protection Alliance, Jake, Damien, Chad. They do very similar work to what we do. In a lot of ways, they do better work than we do in Asia, focused on the similar stuff that we've talked about. And those three dudes, I love those three dudes. And the other one I would recommend is the Grand Teton National Park Foundation. That one takes care of one of my favorite national parks, Grand Teton, helps improve the trails, the signage, keeps people safe in the park. I think Grand Teton is just God's piece of heaven on earth. I want to make sure it's taken care of. And then honestly, the Ronald McDonald House. My buddy, his little girl almost died a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And me and him were together when it was happening. It was just the second time she's almost died. And the Ronald McDonald House made it so that they wouldn't have to worry about what they were eating or where they were staying while his daughter, who's just turned one, was fighting for her life. That's what a nonprofit's supposed to be there for. So highly recommended.
Excellent. We've got a Ronald McDonald House here in Orlando next to Nemours Children's Hospital.
Great stuff. Yeah.
And then
I gave you three. More. Sorry.
That's all right. And that's very admirable because you're trying to raise funds for your own nonprofit here. Here you are supporting others. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And the last rapid fire is, what is your favorite quote?
Oh, man. There's so many ones that I'd love. There's I think my favorite quote is one that I have on my bracelet. It comes from my favorite movie. I'm a big stan of like movies and TV shows and stuff. I love The Last of Us. I love Logan. I love Legend of Zelda. I'm a big nerd. But I think my favorite two quotes, now I'm thinking it, is the speech from Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings, such an epic quote where he's like, just keep fighting for the good in this world. There's some good worth fighting for. It's one that's, I think, niched into your guys' UN jackets.
It is.
Yeah. So I love that quote because, I mean, those guys just went through it and they're still fighting for some good. But there's the one that, the movie Logan, God, I love this movie so much. So the very last part of the movie, Logan gives his life to defeat Boyd and Boyd's team of goons he sends after the kids. And it costs Logan his life. And he's talking to his daughter, and his last words to his daughter is, don't be what they made you. And God, I just love that quote so much, because it's something that we always give to our girls as well. Don't be what they made you. They made you into a sexual object. You're so much more than that. But I think life as a whole is for all of us. Like, life beats us down. Life can spit us out, can make us bitter, can make us cruel, can make us, like, how many of us have been stabbed in the back by a friend, a family member, a business partner? It could totally turn us into assholes. I think the biggest victory we can give to ourselves and showing that we've won in those kind of conflicts or to not be what they've made us. And off the top of my head, that's probably my favorite quote.
Excellent. Excellent. So, what is it that gives you hope? I mean, you've seen more despair than most people will ever see in multiple lifetimes. So what keeps you rolling?
Oh man, I think, that's a good question. I would be lying if I didn't say that sometimes it's tough to find hope.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're just, what am I doing? What are we doing? You cut off one head and two more take its place. You put one guy in jail and all of a sudden five more show up on the radar. You sometimes wonder, just what you're doing. And for a lot of the time, I didn't like when, like, the survivors would say some nice things about me or the nonprofit. I'd be like, you got to keep that yourself. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't want to hear the nice things you have to say. For whatever reason, just didn't like hearing it. And then a while back, I just started saving, like, the nice things that they said. Because I know that we'll never really end this. It's just not possible. We'll never, as much as we can help Colombia, Mexico is just as bad, if not worse, or Thailand is just as bad, if not worse, or Miami is just as bad, if not worse, of the things that's going on. But so I have this on my WhatsApp. I have these like starred messages that I've kept over the years where it just gives me, I don't know, it gives me just a reason of like, okay, this kid, this person, this law enforcement officer got to grow up because of us, got to get some kind of help because of us. And I'll read a couple just to give you like context of, I used to not like people telling me this. I'm like, don't tell me it. I don't want to hear it. But now I think it comes from such a place of just vulnerability and gratitude. I just acknowledge that they say it. So one is, it's from a law enforcement officer. He said, Libertas is the reason anyone has been prosecuted and you're the one helping the victims. We know who the hero is in this story. One of them was, from a survivor that we helped rescue from a child pornography ring. She sent us a selfie of her and her sister walking the streets. She was like, me and my sister want to walk today. It's because of you all that we can now walk on the street free of fear and free of crime, knowing that no one will do anything to hurt us.
Jeez.
That was really impactful. Copasis, there's some birthday messages that I'll skip more. This is from a law enforcement officer that that saw Esme testify. She was present while that happened, and she was, those girls made all the difference today. I wanted to talk to both of them and tell them how amazed I was at their courage. I don't have the Spanish vocabulary to express what I wanted to say. So please tell her this. Please tell Esme I was so proud of her. I literally cried tears of pride for her while she spoke, and several more times throughout the day when I think of her speech. Her speech was so intelligently written, so powerful, and she delivered it so maturely and composed, despite how difficult and scary I know it must have been. She took back her power. She took her power back from him. She took the power back that he robbed from all those children with her words. She sealed his fate with her bravery and intelligence today. I hope she knows that, and I hope that she continues to feel an immense amount of pride for that moment for the rest of her life. God bless her always. You know, stuff like that. Stuff like that. So I have like a whole list of those types of messages.
Excellent.
And on my bad days, I'll check in on one and be okay. We have made a difference for somebody today, and that gives me hope. It gives me hope that if Libertas exists for all this time, or we exist for all this time, and God forbid I quit tomorrow, or the nonprofit goes away, or something happens, or I die in a car crash, or whatever, that the nonprofit helped somebody live a normal life, that gave somebody a chance to grow up. I mean, what more can you ask for?
And those are genuine comments from people who were being victimized, as well as those who are sworn to protect. I mean, that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. Okay, so let's go do a financial question. If you suddenly had unlimited funding tomorrow, what's the very first thing you'd build?
Man, if I had an unlimited financial resource, I mean, the first thing I'd do is probably give my team a pay raise, because they definitely deserve a little bit of a bump. They get paid well for like where they live, but they definitely deserve a bump. If I had unlimited resources, I think what I would build is a home for teenagers transitioning from being teens to adults, as they learn how to survive on their own, not be dependent on their family, and learn to live in like a real society. And then on the law enforcement end, I'm not sure what the resources look like, but if there's a way that I could invest in law enforcement to have 5 or 6 more investigators in every airport, if I had unlimited resources, at least one or two investigators in every airport to verify the reason these people are going to these places, and hold them accountable if they're hurting kids in all these different countries, I'd probably invest in that. I know there's funding there's restrictions. I know that there's things happening. But as far as really stopping this crime, you have to stop. There's a supply because there's a demand. And you have to address the demand and hold the demand accountable before the supply will go down. So that's probably what I do, is the house for the victims, and then and the investment in law enforcement.
Like it. If you had the ability, what's one law in the United States that you would rewrite immediately?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I was in a case once where a guy, his name is Victor Galarza. He's from New York, and he was charged with the production and the dissemination of child pornography, CSAM. And when we were in his sentencing hearing, he pled guilty, and it's all documented of the victims that he had. The judge said something that really upset me, where he let the court know that he had to sentence Victor for at least 15 years. And he went out of his way to be like, now, I think the mandatory minimum for this crime is way too high and needs to be lowered. And that moment kind of stuck with me, where I was like, I disagree 1,000%. I think if you're going to abuse a child, doesn't matter where, not just the cruelty of abusing the child, but then recording it and sending it off so that anyone can do whatever with those videos, I think that should be double. I don't think it should be 15. I think it should be 30. 30 years mandatory minimum. If you're going to abuse a child, film it, and then share it with people, I think that mandatory minimum is not nearly high enough. I would rewrite that to make it a lot higher. And it all came from this judge who thought it was too low. And I don't think he's ever met a real victim of that crime. That when they're walking down the street, when someone smiles at them, they don't know if someone is smiling at them because they're just being nice, or someone smiling at them because they recognize them in the pornography video they watched last night when they were going to sleep.
Right.
Like I don't think that judge knew the kind of trauma those kids go through. That's why I would rewrite that one. Probably the first one I rewrite.
I like it. I'd be right there with you.
Thanks,
boys. So if someone's listening to this today and they suspect that there's human trafficking going on, exactly what should they do and what should they not do?
I would definitely not approach the trafficker or try to like rescue them themselves. That could be very dangerous. And victims is a victim can be a victim of human trafficking, but it doesn't always mean that they recognize they're a victim. During one of our rescues, one of the minors, a 12-year-old girl, had a knife on her, and she tried to knife me because she had no idea who we were. And she was so beaten and brainwashed that she had no concept of who was the good guys and who was the bad guys. It took a long time to prove to her that we were the good guys. And so it could be dangerous. So approaching them, not smart. first thing I do is call 911 right away. Document what you can, car, license plate, where they're at, what's going on, document all you can as far as like information, but then call 911, call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, and get law enforcement involved if you suspect human trafficking. I think that's the safest way to do it for the person observing. It's the safest result for the victim. Law enforcement has a mandate to do that. And so calling that 911 and getting them to intervene, I think, is the most safest spot. And then let the law enforcement do their work in the way they can. Because these guys are dangerous. If you approach them, I mean, they're packing. The victims might be packing some kind of weapon. And these people have no morals as far as trafficking children. So they're not going to think twice for causing you harm as well.
Right. I think it's all good advice.
Yeah.
You mentioned the National Human Trafficking Hotline. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've got an ink pen or a pencil or jot this on your phone, it's 888-373-7888. Again, 888-373-7888. Or you can text *233-733. Again, *233-733. And their website is humantraffickinghotline.org. It's 24/7, and whatever you send them is confidential, so you don't have to worry about your own safety there. Don't be afraid. You see, Tyler, the commercials where it's showing children walking through, and maybe a man is holding a little girl's hand, and she'll tag somebody walking by, and when they turn around and look, she's flashing four fingers. Is that a legitimate alert?
It can be, yeah. I mean, it's not always a legitimate alert. And that's what's tough, is sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Sometimes victims leave things in airport and in airlines, help me, I'm being hurt, or give somebody a note. I actually had a case once where we were in a brothel just doing some undercover stuff with the cops, and a victim passed us a note. And for a reason, she just knew that we weren't the normal douchebags that come in here.
Mm-hmm.
And on the note, it said, "Ayúdanos, por favor," which means help us in Spanish. And obviously that, we're like, well, we got some victims here, because who would say that in a nightclub? I mean, some people do the 4-4. But then a lot of these things get passed around on internet claims where it's not verified information, or it might be small town hysteria. And like, I don't want to like dismiss people's desire to help, but the white van outside of Target, probably not going to traffic you. Because that's very open in public, and it's there's so many cameras around, and a grocery store, that's probably not going to happen. There was a lady, God bless her. But she's in her mid-50s or something, and she was convinced she was almost trafficked in South Jordan, Utah. She described the story. It was a van that parked too close to her, and there were some people inside. I just don't think that's a valid... the fear is valid, but the reality is probably not that valid. You're more likely than not, versus Noel's like four fingers, to look at people's demeanor or what they have kind of on them in person. The branding, a lot of these girls will be branded. If they have a brand tattoo, yeah, it's a big red sign, because traffickers are so narcissistic that they put that on there. If a teen has just an obscene amount of cash or a lot of money in her Venmo, that's a red flag. If someone seems overly tired, or if they seem drugged out, like a physical symptom they're showing, that's a much more likely sign of being trafficked versus like flashing the 4-4. Because like 4-4, if a trafficker got wind of that, the victim was doing that, they would beat the living crap out of that kid.
Yeah.
And you beat something enough, it's not going to misbehave in that way. But if you look at, you can't beat the effects of an overdose out of someone, or you can't beat the look of just, I haven't slept in 5 days, out of someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would, if people are looking to help someone that's being trafficked, have suspicions of someone being trafficked, look at those physical indicators of what they look like on their face. They have any tattoos that are weird, obscene amount of cash. If you interact with a grown adult and a child, and if the child doesn't say a word, the adult won't let them say a word, more than likely that trafficker is not permitting that child to say anything for the fear that she asked for help. That's another red flag as well.
Good things to know, everybody. So, Tyler, I'm guessing that there's probably three kinds of people that are listening to our discussion today and yesterday. And I'm thinking that maybe there's someone who knowingly walks past trafficking every week, that maybe there's someone who may be a victim and they don't know where to turn, or maybe someone involved in trafficking who's convinced that they'll never get caught. So what do you want each of those three people to hear during this interview, starting with the ones who unknowingly walk past trafficking every week?
I think for the first one, just I would say I don't blame you for walking past every week, because it is a crime that's hidden in plain sight. And unless you kind of have an eye to see, it's hard to recognize, because these traffickers, they want to stay out of the public eye the best they can. And for our society, I know I'm guilty of this, Steve, but how many times do you sit on a bus and just look at your phone, or go to the park and check your email or scroll TikTok? Or for me, like, yeah, I want to see how my, on the podcast, Locked Off Logic, how we're doing on likes and views on our most recent video. And I get distracted. And so people walking past, it's tough to recognize because we're so distracted as a society.
Right.
So I guess first thing I would say is I'm with you. I'm just perpetually distracted. And then two, it's easy to learn the signs. Like, it's not hard. You Google it, there's YouTube videos on it of the top 10 signs of someone being trafficked. Learn them and then just be aware and follow your gut. And in fact, like the four fingers thing, is it real? Probably not. Should you call the cops? I mean, why not? If you suspect something in your gut that's strange, I would still alert the authorities. I had a cop tell me once that he would rather have 10 false flag stops than have missed the one that was the real thing.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, trust your gut on that one. I mean, the second one, as far as like the victim that may be being trafficked,
doesn't know where to turn.
Yeah, I'd say there's places to turn. Depending on where you are, you can call a human trafficking hotline. You can DM Libertas. We'll help you. Other places will help you. Chad and his boys would help you. The cops aren't the bad guys as much as the traffickers tell you they're bad guys. They're not. If you call the cops, there is help for you. If you go to a police station and ask for help, like, they, more likely than not, they will help you, or at least look into your claims, which I think is the very minimum that they should do. And there's hope. As long as you're still breathing, there's hope. I'm a big believer that if you still have life in your lungs and you still have hope to find a new life, there's resources for you. Some of them are private, some of them are public, but there are resources of ways that you can at least have the attempt of a good life. We can't guarantee outcomes. We really can't. And we tell our girls this all the time, Steve, because not every girl that comes through Libertas is like Esme or Lucy. In fact, the majority aren't. Now, the majority have not gone back, but they're not activists, they're not future attorneys, they're not all these different things. But we promise all of them, we'll give you the resources that you can make the attempt at a new life. The results depend on you. It takes a lot of hard work and then a lot of luck too. It takes a lot of luck to stumble into the right job or the right opportunity. It's just the way the world works. It's hard work and a little bit of luck. But we'll give you the chance to get lucky and to have some opportunities. The results depend on you. And as we work in our little sectors of the world, and other places work in their little sectors of the world. And if you find the right nonprofit that has the resources to help, then you can have that chance. There's help for you. And as far as the traffickers, man, the first thing I'll say is I was telling them to F off. And like you said, there's nothing worse than someone that sells a child. I have no, sometimes they try to like play the compassionate card in court where you understand they tricked me or my dad beat me or whatever. And it's like, you raped a kid. I don't give a crap about your sob story. You can tell me that you had the worst child in the world. If you raped a kid now, you can go to hell. You can go to prison. You can go find rehab in prison. And that you're going to pay for what you've done. I'm a believer in God. And so I think that no matter what, there's I had a guy tell me once, Steve, that he told me, he's a Christian guy. He told me, I think that hell is such a beautiful concept because hell actually gives me more hope than a heaven. He's like, I know I'm going to heaven. But sometimes people just get off with these crimes on earth and they just get to keep on doing their thing. That the fact that there's a built-in system in God's plan that those guys get punished, the concept of a hell gives me more hope and gratitude to God than there being a heaven. And on my bad days, I'm kind of with him. I like that line of thinking of hell being a gift to those that might not see justice in this life, a gift to those victims that might see, like the guy in Idaho, watch their abuser walk free.
Yeah, I have to say, I never looked at it that way, but it kind of does make sense.
It does make sense. I never neither. I'm always like, hell, freak, I got to repent and I go to hell, which is true. But the way he described it, and he worked this a long time and he's very hardened with the situation. And the way he worded it, I'm just, yeah, I mean, he's right. Like having a hell, a punishment for those that might get off in this life with our system, with our imperfect system, it does bring me some hope, but it gives me some hope. And I'd say that there's, that you're going to, that we're coming for you. That there will be, there will be justice. There will be vengeance, if you want to call it vengeance, but you will, like if you're unlucky enough to cross paths with Libertas, like we're going to do everything that we can to hold you accountable. And I know that we are one of dozens of nonprofits that do the work that we do, and we're going to do all we can to make sure you're held accountable. And if you're not held accountable in this life, by God, you will be held accountable in the next life. And that gives me a lot of hope.
Yep. Is there, before I let you go, is there, and I agree with everything you said, brother.
Thanks,
I think please. That's why we like talking to each other. We think a lot alike. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you want to mention?
No, man, I don't think so. I want to say thanks again for having me on the Game of Crimes podcast. And I'm just grateful for you, man. I'm grateful that I met you. I'm grateful that you're so involved and some of the girls like Angie, Esme, Lucy. Hopefully continue blue. Hope you continue to meet more of them. And yeah, man, I'm just glad to have you on our side and glad to have the support of the Game of Crimes community, because it is an amazing community that has helped us in a lot of different ways.
And I tell you what, man, just you saying that about the listeners here, I have a whole new respect for the Game of Crimes listeners. The fact that you guys are actually listening to what's going on and you're doing some, stepping up to do something about it to help protect the most vulnerable, and that's our children. Just hats off to you. Oh, man. Sometimes I get to feel sorry for myself, and there's absolutely no reason for it because God's given me a good life here. But hearing that keeps me motivated to keep going on and trying to do the right thing through the show here. So if you'd like to find out more about our guest today, Mr. Tyler Schwab, the website that he talks about is LibertasInternational.org. And again, Libertas is LIBERTAS. International.org. His podcast, we briefly mentioned there, Locked Off Logic. Come over and check him out. Your co-host, I apologize, I forgot his name.
Sam.
Yeah. Come over and check these guys out. You might see some people in there you recognize. You never know. On Instagram, you can find him at TylerSchwab20 and also at Libertas International. Same on Facebook, TylerSchwab20 and Libertas International. TikTok is LibertasFree. F-R-E-E, X, Libertas International. And last but certainly not least, on LinkedIn, Tyler Schwab and Libertas International. Go check these. Please go check Tyler out. Check out his organization. Subscribe to him. Follow him. Send him a like. Let him know that you heard him here on the Game of Crimes podcast. Help keep them motivated. Tyler's seeing things that most people will never see in their life. There are studies out there that show how many traumatic events people typically go through in their life. And a person in a non-first responder role or non-military role typically will encounter 3 to 4 traumatic events in their lifetime. First responders are looking at 400 to 600 traumatic events in a lifetime. It's not even in the same ballpark. And people that are in a position like Tyler here, where he risks his life for people he doesn't know because he's doing the right thing, because he's on a God-led mission, he's going through the same traumatic events that first responders and our military folks go through. So yeah, he needs your support. We've had a couple conversations where I get down and I talk to him and he builds me back up and vice versa. So the fact that you take the time to say, hey, good job out there, I want to support you, even if it's not financially, they do need the financial support. I don't know if my numbers are even right now, Tyler, but I think that you guys have probably helped over 3,000 victims, and it's not cheap. One of the things I meant to mention when you were talking about supporting law enforcement is I know you've told me stories before where some of these third world countries didn't have money to fly police officers to the location where the crime was being committed, and you guys were ponying up for their airline tickets. So it's not a cheap endeavor. I'll tell you, the man is not – this is not a – You tell me if I'm wrong. Are you making $150,000 a year as a CEO of a nonprofit?
No, man, I wish.
So he's putting his money where it needs to go. All right. So show him some love. Show him some support. Thank you so much for continuing to come here and listen to me ramble on here on the Game of Crimes. And I hesitate to close out like I usually do, but I'm going to because we've been doing it for this is our 6th year being on the air. I know why you keep coming back, because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, and certainly the most dangerous game of all, and that's our Game of Crimes. God bless you all. See you next week.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.